A Hero's Journey is a podcast filled with spoilers. We recommend reading the book each week before you listen, but we trust you to make your own decision.
Hi, and welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast where we talk about whether drinks deserve to be from tropical islands.
Welcome to our tropical island podcast.
I'm your host and judge, Jack, and I'm here with my altruistic AIs.
This is Alex.
And I am Zach.
Each week, we look at a new book through Joseph Campbell's monomyth.
This week, we're discussing Cytonic by Brandon Sanderson, the third novel in his Skyward series. A series that takes place far in the future of our own universe where humanity has spread across the galaxy. This week, once again, we're following Spin, a.k.a. Spensa, as she learns more about Cytonic powers, the history of Cytonics, as well as the land of nowhere where she currently finds herself. Now, Spin was fleeing from capture from a government coup that's trying to blame her for the destruction of and death of several people. And as she does so, she goes through a portal with her AI friend, Mbot, to the land of nowhere, which is a world where the government is mining for specific resources, as well as different pirate gangs roam, and it's which is essentially an archipelago of islands.
Archipelago.
Yeah, that. And but each one being a kind of a different world that they have to hop between in order to hunt down these portal stones that she's trying to use to get home. Each one reveals new information to her as she meets different gangs of characters. She's introduced to new characters, especially some pirate gangs, as well as some old characters we see, such as the Kitsune captain who makes a reappearance. She's able to overcome these obstacles while learning more about herself as well as the past, and finally come to the end of her journey where she has a large choice to make.
And we begin our delightful space pirate voyage where they always begin, jumping through a portal into a magical land. Actually, that's probably a pretty good place for a space pirate journey to begin, not gonna lie.
For our journey this week, we're following Spin, aka Spensa, as she learns more about Cytonic powers, the history of Cytonics, as well as the land of nowhere where she currently finds herself. So, speaking of currently finding herself, we have her call to adventure, jumping through a portal to an unknown world, knowing that it may not be safe, but it's certainly safer than where you're leaving from. And so it's a pretty unique sort of, oh, I'm in a place I don't know anything about, and this is going to be a unique adventure. The refusal of the call, I don't think, is something that particularly stands out in this book, simply because the sort of isolated nature. There are portions later we'll talk about in the Temptress where maybe returning is not an option, but especially at this point in the journey, she is gung-ho on getting home and aka surviving. Those two things put together make it very difficult for her to refuse the adventure that she's found herself on. For our meeting with the mentor, we have Chet, who at the very beginning of the story here is a great aid to her, especially because she's on Dinosaur Island, it seems. Like I've mentioned, let me put it this way. Each of the sort of worlds and islands in this conglomeration that is the land of nowhere has their kind of gimmick and theme. And it seems like the place she's found herself on is definitely prehistoric times. And Chet comes in and saves her butt from a dinosaur. And for the rest of the story, provides useful advice on nowhere that is certainly mentoring. We're crossing the threshold. Now, Spin has found herself in a place that is wholly unfamiliar, but she has to keep going deeper, right? She can't just stay stagnant. And so she has to cross the threshold with teaming up with Chet and moving on to the next fragment and progressing her journey. And so this moving away from the initial point of entry is her crossing the threshold. Now, for the belly of the whale, we have when she realizes what her real sort of goal is, deciding that she needs to get to Lightburst, which is like the epicenter of nowhere, and that's how she can get back to the normal universe. Now, we'll talk about later how she could stay there and slowly lose herself, but once she's committed to this is where I need to get to, the rest of the journey stems from that step-by-step journey.
So for our journey here, I think that this is fine. It kind of veers away from the overarching journey of the Skyward series, right? The overarching journey being to rescue the humans, get them out of where they're captured and held. So this is a nice different kind of jog away from it, but I think that Spencer really does spend all of her time, and she needs to spend all of her time learning more about her powers and the history of them. This is probably why I didn't like this book as much as the others, but we'll get to that later. For our call to adventure, I think that this is fine. Going through that portal and into the nowhere, and really the kind of a voice coming out of the ether telling her to follow the path of the elders, that's pretty straightforward call to adventure, even more so than our normal call to adventures in the YA world. A voice of God, in quotes, telling you to go on a journey here. It's pretty good. But like kind of Zach said, I don't think that Spencer has a refusal. She doesn't refuse anything. She's gung-ho about it. Like almost all of our YA heroes, I think she just is excited to get on to the adventure.
Yeah, I mean, I buy that.
Okay. So for meeting the mentor, Chet, I don't think he gives her a lot of the relevant info that he should be. It's not revealed till much later that he's an AI and he's one of the Delvers and all of that stuff. But even right now, he doesn't give her any of the relevant information about what's going on, where are they going, why are they going there. And he knows all of this. He knows a lot of what's going to be revealed on the Path of the Elders. Well, he knows.
I want to push back first, Jake. Yeah. I don't think a mentor is required to info dump to our hero. You know, for example, a very contemporary, or I guess pseudo contemporary, Obi-Wan could have told Luke that Vader was his father.
But in defense of Obi-Wan, it wasn't written that way originally. He didn't know it.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about the story as it happened. And I'm just saying that, or we could use Aragorn. Brom doesn't tell him that he's his father. Stuff like that.
I'm
like,
also not convinced whether or not that was true before. No, I'm kidding.
I'm just saying that not everything has to be shared with the hero. The hero is supposed to, and a good mentor knows they have to discover things for themselves.
I mean, that's true, but I don't think that Chet does a lot of mentoring at all.
He teaches her a lot about... So where I would especially give Zach points is that the persona of Chet seems to be the mentor, especially on the part of the quest that is surviving the nowhere and getting more familiar with her powers. Because, well, we know that Chet is actually a Delver, especially at the beginning. The Delver has very thoroughly lost themselves in the concept of being Chet as a defense mechanism. And so they are channeling all of Chet's memories that they have because they brutally murdered Chet.
Fine, brutally.
Well, they said they tore him to shreds in an endless void of the nothing. So...
I suppose you could classify that as brutally.
I would say that it definitely... Chet the Adventurer, our Indiana Jones, if you've ever played any of World of Warcraft, I thought of him looking like Reno Jackson the entire time. And that persona definitely teaches Spin kind of two separate things. One, about the world that she now finds herself in and how to survive. And two, he also kind of acts as, on Spin's emotional development, this still burgeoning part of herself that realizes that life doesn't have to be about war. And Chet definitely is a big part of... Right, she starts getting thoughts about, well, why couldn't I just spend my days adventuring with Chet and exploring these weird, awesome places that are a microcosm of the universe? It's ultimately not what she does, but it is an important part of her character growth. And okay. This journey, because of how interconnected being a Titanic is, and this path of the elders adventure that we're on, I feel like it's hard to separate Spence's personal growth away from that.
Okay, that's fine. So going on to our crossing the threshold, I don't like this. I think that the crossing the threshold has to be tied in to the portal into the nowhere, or that first step into nowhere. Once she's there, I mean, she's there, right? There's already an attack on her before Chet even arrives, correct? Like, as soon as she steps through
the... Yeah, there's a dino right away.
Yeah, so the danger is already present as soon as she crosses that threshold. What made you decide to make this the crossing the threshold instead of that entering the portal?
It mainly had to do with timing. You know, and this suffers a little bit from the fact that it's a third book of many in this particular aspect, in which the adventure that she finds herself on is a subsection of her larger journey. It's distinct, like we talked about earlier, but it's still the reason she has to do all this is because she's fleeing like the quote unquote main storyline for the overarching series. And so in order to get to this adventure, she had to cross the threshold a little early. Now, you could definitely put, hey, walking through the portal to nowhere was the crossing of the threshold, but she wasn't aware of the journey that she was going to find herself in until after she'd entered into nowhere. I think if we take a look at the main goal of Spin throughout the entire series, it would be to help humans free themselves and remain free of imprisonment. And then if we look at, they call that like goal A, storyline A, and if we take a look at learning more about herself and her abilities as storyline B, I feel like for the first two books, A was big A and B was little B, and so she was always in the back of her mind, and then when she swaps here into nowhere, she cannot impact A, so it becomes little A and B becomes big B, and that's why I put them kind of in this order, or did not choose the thing that you suggested.
Mm-hmm. I will also say that I'm not completely convinced that at the end of this, we're not going to get a big nobody died party. We finally stopped the superiority. And reminder, Delvers.
I think it's the opposite. I think it was that the Delvers were like a fake bait and switch. You think the enemy is the superiority? Oh, it's actually the Delvers. It's like it was the superiority all along.
Time will tell in the Defiant if that game sticks.
I seem to think that it will be like the Delvers will somehow like stay a force of nature, and that they'll be like the omnipresent, but they'll have some sort of real coping or real defense mechanism against them. And they may find out that while the superiority itself was inherently flawed, that it has been cleansed or purged or somehow. And
yeah, I mean, they'll overthrow Winsick, the spirit will get reestablished. The question will be whether it's the humans the humans and their allies exist as two separate governments or one big happy government. I'm gonna guess that Mbot is gonna ride off into the distance with all of the Delvers, and it's gonna be a question of whether or not Spensa has to go with them or not. But we're in the theory crafting that should be at the end of this podcast, not in the middle of our discussion of the departure. So moving on from the starting point, just always comes across as just a little bit vague, right? The two big "we're not in Kansas anymore" moments that come to me are getting to the edge of that first platform and really getting a concept of what these fragments are, and then second one's probably, oddly enough, the water fragment when they're sailing and they've got the beasts under them, but that just feels like maybe it's my obsession with this as a pirate novel.
Feels kind of like the marsh in Lord of the Rings. The dead, whatever.
So I agree with you that from a chronology standpoint, that getting off that first fragment fits. It feels, in a book filled with very literal thresholds, weird that's the one that we have to use here.
All right, then. And going on to our belly, I think that this is actually good because this is solidifying that she's going to focus on these learning about the Cytonics and not trying to get back to the DDF and start fighting for her people. She is going to spend this time here, which I think is most likely relevant. We can say definitely relevant at the end of this book, but she's going to spend her time here learning about herself and the history of the Delvers and not proceed on to fight in this war as just a simple starfighter.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I awarded the crossing the threshold, which means I think I'm kind of obligated to go with the belly here. But it does, a part of it still bugs me that at the very beginning of this book, we get a you in or you out. This is your last chance to go home moment. And it's like page 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, it seems to be, it's because they don't want her there, was the vibe I got, right?
Well, no, she just knows that she can go home, right? She has like the I can go home, and Chet Delver is like, hey, you can go home or you can come here and learn the truth. And he sets up this big fake quest for her. That's going to close us out on our departure with just that refusal of the call missing, which is honestly not surprising given everything that we've talked about. Our character's gung-ho, and depending on how you want to interpret it, given where the last book left off, some of these points might happen even earlier. So I don't really know if she had a chance to refuse the call. Coming right on in, jumping fragment to fragment, we find ourselves in our initiation.
Yes. Let me sit forward and get closer to my microphone. For our road of trials, we find out what the Path of Elders entails, and it's that you need to get these portal stones, and that each of the so it's kind of like a advanced fetch quest, and each item on the fetch quest unlocks understanding and information.
It's not a fetch quest. It's an A, B, C. Your princess was in another castle all along because the only relevant information's at the end.
I guess that's fair. It's a, it's, well, we have clear-cut goals that we have to undergo, which is a little bit of a departure from book 1 and 2, in which her trials were sort of, she figured them out as she went along sort of thing. But here we get, hey, in order to get to Lightburst, you need these portal stones. And these portal stones, as you go through them, seems to reveal things to you. So she grows in her understanding of several things. Cytonic history, her own abilities, and like what the nowhere is, the land of nowhere is, with each of the portal stone. And so I think they make pretty good trials. Now, the trial in their own right, you know, those are like the, I guess, the end pieces of the trial, right? The trial is getting to the portal stones, but easily definable goal along the way is nice, I think, for this story. For the meeting of the higher power, we have Peg, who's the leader of the Broadsider Pirates, a group of space pirates that don't give off enough Treasure Planet vibes for me personally, but she is certainly useful from both a, oh, I have these resources available to me that I can help provide you, as well as an informational standpoint. I mean, she's a cool character, but she certainly holds a lot of power, and her acceptance of Spin into the pirate group is the kind of the gift that she bestows upon Spin. For the Temptress, we have an understanding that nowhere saps the memories of those who inhabit it. So there's a, becomes an increasingly strong desire to forget the world before, the before times, and to stay in the nowhere and continue to live this life of an adventurer or an explorer or a pirate, what have you, and forget about her people that she's trying to get back to. And so that temptation to stay there and let those kind of memories drift away is almost, I would be akin to maybe like a drug user, knowing that, hey, you can forget all these things and live this new life, or try to go back to the old life that is potentially dangerous and painful. Now, for the atonement with the Creator, we have the memory of Jason Wright, the first Cytonic, and ties into a little short story that Sanderson published called Defending Elysium, but if you haven't read that, it's not a huge deal. But she learns about the creation of the first AI and then is able to piece that together with the understanding of what the Delvers are, which becomes her apotheosis, right? The realization that Delvers are deformed AI. They formed attachments with the original Cytonics, and then upon their death sort of went mental and became the Delvers that we know today. And then for our ultimate boon, she reaches all the way to Lightburst. She achieves this final memory, gets to leave nowhere, and actually merges with Chet, who we find out is a Delver himself. He's been an AI all along, and has kind of been her mentor slash guide intentionally to get to this point. And then in order to kind of come with her, he merges with her, and she gains his memories.
Zach, starting out with our Road to Trials here, my biggest issue is it's a fake Road of Trials.
Define fake.
Like it's made up.
Journey before destination, Alex. Come on.
It's okay. Made up by the Delvers? It's made up Fair. By...
It's made up by Chet. The Path of Elders is not a real thing.
Yeah, just, I know, but...
Just mix it up, man. Like what?
But it's real to Spensa.
I mean, I and it's real in that, like, it exists. She does go on it.
It's not, and it's not a path. There's right. The impression is that he basically went. There's a bunch of these memory stones. I'm going to pick out like five of them, but the important one is getting her to mine at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if she had gotten to the last one at the end, would she have had like the?
Oh, she would have died because she wouldn't have had time to hone her powers.
Yeah, exactly. So the other two were important.
You know, Alex, I want to agree with you on principle, but I believe as solid Sanderson fans, we can't argue that a journey that was made up doesn't still constitute a road when she does develop in every aspect of her character, undergoing the trials and tribulations of getting to these three stones, whatever many it was.
However many stones she needs.
We read this a while ago, guys. Sorry. All right, that's fine. So going on to our meeting with a higher power. If we want to say it's Peg, that's okay. But I want a specific gift. If there was something like Peg giving Spensa the Doomslug badge back, I think that would have been good. Like what?
Oh, honest to God, Doomslug is the higher power for me.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Doomslug disguises himself as that thing the whole time, and she starts to forget that he's Doomslug. But then
she never knows that it's Doomslug. But she figures it out towards the end, and then Doomslug or M-Bot both do very. M-Bot's part of the crew the whole time, so it's a little bit harder to put him as the higher power with his final sacrifice. But I mean, Doomslug is providing her with memory, with the ability to keep her memories the whole time, and then throws up a magic shield and does a final stand, get behind me move during the last confrontation that saves them.
I think Peg, I like that better.
I understand the desire to go with Peg because, I mean,
can we just talk about how the pirate's name is Peg?
Yeah, it's delightful.
She also has a peg leg. I don't know if you guys looked at the drawings, but.
I also absolutely fucking love the fact I love that species in their weird tree, like symbiotic thing. It's great. But I feel like Peg needs too much from Spensa. Peg, outside of the bit where she keeps her prisoner and like is kind of her captor slash squad commander, doesn't ever feel like a higher power at any other time. She feels more like an equal or potentially somebody who's playing a different game during that one bit where we might be suspicious of her. Makes it harder for me to see her as somebody who descends, gives a gift or an advice or knowledge, and then, right, normally our higher power, we like our higher power to go away.
Jack, like you're saying, she's playing a different game entirely. She's just wanting to get control of the nowhere. That's her whole thing. She's not trying to help Spensa. Actually, I would consider Spensa a higher power to her. She is there for a minute, gets Spensa
Spencer shows up under mysterious circumstances.
Is it okay for Doomslug? I guess the gift he's providing all along is the memory. I was gonna say if the gift is the shield at the end, then that comes a little late for me.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it being the memory thing.
So for our Temptress, I think that this is good. It's kind of clear that this happens to a lot of people. They get stuck in the nowhere, they forget stuff, and then they just kind of make their lives and live their lives new. I think I might be colored a little bit by the fact that Chet says this happened to him and he has forgotten everything. The other characters we meet don't appear to have forgotten everything, and Chet's lying, but I still think that it's a good temptation for Spin, because it would fill a lot of roles for her. She's exploring, she's doing what she wants, discovering new things, acting like a hero in her stories.
And it is clearly tempting, because when the Delvers offer her the deal, she thinks about it, right? Ultimately, we watch her internal monologue where she does always come back to, can't really trust the Delvers, but she says multiple times that if she thought the deal was honest, she might take it. That she thought her people stood a good enough chance that that would be a good deal, and she'd be happy with it.
Yeah, so humans are brutal.
So moving on to our atonement with the creator, I guess my biggest problem with this is what interaction does Spencer have with Jason Wright? He doesn't interact with her. He doesn't care about her. He doesn't know her. She's not gleaning information from him. The Delvers are that memory.
Do you believe that Jason Wright cared about his AI and wanted it to live, the AI he modeled off of his dead wife?
Most likely then, yes.
And who is Spencer now?
His dead wife.
A gestalt organism of the memories of his dead wife, Chet.
Don't like that. I don't like that at all, Jack.
I mean, it's creepy. No, I don't think that actually holds up in terms of, I think it's funny that it works out that way, but that's not who Spence is at this moment. But he is the first Cytonic, or he viewed himself as the first Cytonic. He wasn't actually.
But if we have to treat this journey as her unlocking, like, understanding of herself and like the past of Cytonics, then pretty much the universe as we know it would not exist if not for Jason Wright. So he's essentially the creator for...
Well, he's the creator of modern humanity, is the way they phrase it in this book. He is responsible for thrusting humans onto the galactic stage, and he creates... Right, he is directly responsible for the first human superiority war. I wish that there had been more... Right, we have a few inklings of the past Cytonics talking directly to her. So I wish there had been some moment of catharsis with the memories of Jason, but ultimately...
You want like a Jedi Force?
Right, she gets the last little power boost that she needs from it, or some piece of key advice of understanding the AI, some key to it, right? The fact that it is his dead wife's memories. But I do think the one bit that we're all forgetting and getting wrong is it's not Jason's memories that she's in.
The Delver's memories.
It's the Delver's memories, which means that ultimately the person we'd be arguing as the higher power is the Delver entity, which could work, except that we made Chet the mentor.
Huzzah!
I didn't say that it was Jason Wright's memories. I said it was the memory.
I know, but...
Yeah, that's fine.
He doesn't interact with her. We might be able to get to a point where Jason Wright is the creator, but she has no moments with him.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had chosen M-Bot as the mentor,
you would have lost the mentor point. She spends the book mentoring M-Bot.
So for the apotheosis here, the realization about the Delvers, I can't argue against it at all. That's a great realization. This is actually something that I predicted to Jack, kind of. Mostly I just thought there were AIs, not deformed AIs, but yeah. I'm very happy about this.
The bit that we didn't see, I mean, we we agreed upon this. Yeah. It seemed like a pretty clear telegraph. The bit that we got wrong was I assumed that these warnings existed in some way to be like, ooh, we've made this mistake so many times and they keep getting stronger. Not, we made this mistake twice and the second time it got real out of hand real fast.
Yeah. So,
okay, just so does this imply Mbot's age, right?
No, we know Mbot's about 200 to 300 years old or something. They do Chet's age for how long he would have had to have been in the nowhere.
Okay. Because yeah. the problem I have with that then is why? Because Jason's like a long time ago, right?
Jason's thousands of years. The Delvers have existed for 1,000 to 2,000 years or something.
Yeah, so Mbot is the round of second AI, but was self-isolated.
Kind of. It looks like they were making a bigger mistake before. Again, it looks like making AI, even the self-aware AI, doesn't seem to be the problem. It just seems like two times in the past, the very first AI that they made, they fucked up. And this one also just got emotionally crippled on day three of being sentient.
Remind me about the first AI.
What? We don't know anything about it except that all of the ancient Cytonics went and fought something that was like a Delver, we think.
Oh, gotcha.
And okay. All the universe's Cytonics came together and like, right, we're going with like 10 survivors or something because they go, we fought one of them and it wiped out everything. And she goes, okay, there's like thousands of them. And she goes, then we are doomed. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely an apotheosis. I wish that it was more surprising. I wish that Spencer wasn't an idiot. I wish everyone in this universe wasn't an idiot and could have put that together. She's all right. She's getting these memories. It seems pretty obvious. In fairness, I guess they ignore it. Mbot does basically ask at one point if, right, she worries that she's a Delver. Mbot worries that he's a Delver. And they're kind of right.
All
right.
Finally, the ultimate boon. I can't really argue much about it. She learns all about her powers. She understands the Delvers completely. And she's able to get back out and now go on to our main quest, saving the human race and her people on Detritus specifically. So, yay, boon.
Woot woot. That is going to close us out on our initiation with our atonement with the creator missing. Simply because while we have that great potential moment for it, we're a little unsure on who the actual creator would be in that instance. Making a beeline, finding hundreds of eyeless versions of our own friends. We come to the return.
Yeah, for our refusal of the return, we have, I believe, the guilt that she faces from Mbot and Mbot's sacrifice. It's going to, the refusal, the magic flight, and the rescue from without are all going to kind of meld into one here, as they often do, right? We've got the refusal being the guilt of Mbot's sacrifice. We have the rescue being Mbot's actual sacrifice that allows her to get out. And then we have the magical flight being the traveling through the portal back to the main galaxy universe, all kind of rolled into one, which is sad because Mbot is Lucho Bueno.
He's not dead. Also, can we talk about how in our final battle, three different people have a stand behind me moment?
Then for the crossing of the return threshold,
none of them die. Sorry.
Did you want them to die? Are you that sadistic?
Kind of. Yes. I would like a sacrifice to involve somebody actually, you know,
the sacrifice getting sacrificed. Sacrifice?
Well, can't they just, like, can it be emotional / hypothetical sacrifice? Anyway, for the crossing of the return threshold, we're returning to find Detritus is not the place that she remembers, that a lot of things has changed while she's been in the nowhere. And that humans have, or at least this group of humans, have sure moved on from what she remembers when she left.
Yeah, doesn't Jorgen just look fucking hot as hell in his admiral's uniform?
I've also heard that. And then finally, for our Master of the Two Worlds, we have that she is now a Cytonic of no small skill, and that she is a leader, right? We get a lot of situations in book one and two where she showcases leadership abilities, but she's always kind of doubting herself on, oh, can I do it? And once again, she's thrown herself into a completely new situation and still finds a way to prove her leadership abilities. So
I feel like you're trying too hard, Zach. I mean, she's literally now a Gestalt organism that is 2-3-ish people.
She's a master of three worlds. And then finally, for our freedom to live is I don't think really non-existent, because she took.
We got one more book before she's allowed a nap, guys.
Yeah, like she's chosen to come back and fight the good fight.
And isn't that really the freedom that we?
Yeah, the freedom to choose to fight.
Wouldn't actually have been a bad, like, end moral to this book, but it doesn't really get that level of capstone that she is choosing to do this because it's right, not just because it's what she's done her whole life.
But let's go back a little bit. We'll circle back, really. Let's go back to the part of our return here with that refusal. I don't like the Embot guilt thing. I could see before when the AI were attacking and not thinking they should be able to get out. I think that could have worked for a refusal of the return. But, like, I don't...
I mean, that was just being realistic. Like, who knows
if I'll get out. I know, yeah. So, I don't think there is one, really. I think she gets out. She's happy she gets out. She's sad for Ambot, but it's revealed to us, like, minutes later that he's still alive.
Well, what does it mean to... Anyway... Who's right. to say what is or is not being
not
alive?
Not even angry.
Correct. He's alive, but he's definitely something, and that something is not dead.
See, we do what we must because we can.
And she doesn't try and go back for him or stop his sacrifice, or she's not crippled from it. She's a pretty damn good soldier.
She's got nice shoulders.
Maybe that's one of the things Jorgen likes about her. I've only seen fan art. And they all depict her shoulders. Everyone's focused on her hair. But she's a good soldier. She doesn't try and go after him. She goes, okay, Embot is buying me this amount of time. How the fuck do I use this to get out of here?
Yeah. Speaking of getting out, our magical flight with the portal traveling, the mix of going through the portal and Cytonic jumping, I think that's great. It's only happened one other time before to get us into this situation. So I think it makes sense for us to use that to get out. And the rescue from without, I mean, hard to argue with that one, even though it's not really a sacrifice. The sacrifice should have been a sacrifice, maybe, but that's...
Chet gets the closest to a sacrifice, and then Chet also just gets to become one with her.
Well, quote-unquote one, right? Who's in charge?
Yeah, she currently feels a lot like Spencer.
Crossing the return threshold. Yeah, I mean, I gotta give it to you. Detritus has definitely changed a lot now that it's circling another planet, like a moon.
What? I don't know what you're talking about. Hyper jumping an entire planet? Clearly, what? They're still limited.
How could that be?
Read Evershort.
If only, I'd say I didn't read the novellas, but they've had that other elven Cytonic chick there like the whole time, so I'm assuming.
And you think she could jump a fucking planet, sir?
Well, apparently, since they did it.
You should really read the novellas. They're good, I think. Yeah. All of them, Jack. Read Evershore.
I'm going to. My really shitty book arrived via mail, so I'm going to read that today.
What'd you get?
The Six Knots and Crosses book. If you had been there for the recording, Zach, you'd know what I was talking about.
For our Master of Two Worlds, Zach, Spensa is not a leader. This is not a fault that she has. It's just not something she does. That role is taken by Jorgen and also FM. She's a duelist. She's the one-on-one fighter. She's not a general. She's not a leader. That's not how she thinks. Like Jack said, she's a good soldier. She does what she's supposed to. She's good at doing that, but she's not the one making the plans or making the orders.
She's definitely a squad leader.
She's definitely at least a squad leader, but the fact that she's not a general doesn't make her less of a leader.
And again, unfortunately, while I think there's some merit to the argument that maybe the world Zach picked weren't necessarily the two this book focuses on, I think it's hard to argue, Alex, in a book that is very much about a character crossing into a new world and very literally mastering it, that we don't have some sort of mastery of two worlds.
And Jack wants to think it's that she's a weird...
She is a hybrid organism now. That's how is being Spensa and the Cytonic and this new organism, maybe she won't have mastered it, so you could argue that. But right, she physically takes a bit of the nowhere with her. She is now something new. And I think we've agreed previously that she has reached a level of mastery in the old world.
Do you want to argue that there is a freedom to live, Alex?
No, I don't. I would prefer not to.
Strange.
That is going to wrap up our return with our refusal and freedom missing, which I do feel are a classic pair. It's up there with freedom and mastery, both missing for characters at the end of their first book, where they've only really mastered the one good world. I feel like the refusal is often on our missteps. It's going to leave us with a final score of 13 out of 17. Unsurprisingly, putting Spence is still in our hero category, even though you're about to listen to us in the post-discussion probably rip this book apart, not for being bad, but for not being what we wanted. Hard to argue that our magical quest through a new and interesting world wasn't going to get us a pretty archetypical hero's journey. I think the only step I'm surprised isn't there is an atonement with the creator, because this type of story feels like it's crying out for it. Coming in on our closing thoughts, partially because I know that everyone else wants to talk about the things they didn't like. I want to stay positive here. I've really enjoyed this series. I liked getting to learn more about the history of the Cytonics. As I talked about, I think it points out some flaws maybe in the overarching world design, but it is fun as we go to go, oh, there were delvers in the past. There was a Cytonic community. There's this really interesting, it makes it feel rich and old in a way that this universe hadn't before. I thought that even though I very much wanted to spend time with all of the characters we've gotten to know for two books, Sanderson packed in a lot of character to all of these pirates that we get to meet in a way that does very convincingly sell you on why Spencer might want to stay here forever and live this weird pirate adventure life in a land where they dogfight for fun. And lastly, I adored this section of M'Bot coming into his own. It worked for me really well. I thought we'd had it in the last book with him growing and accepting, but this only went to prove how much it was fun to basically watch a child grow up very rapidly who could speak in coherent sentences.
Okay, so I'm going to start off with what I didn't like, and I do want to end on a point, something I did like. When I read the Skyward series, so I'm expecting a YA-based, like, jaunt through space and lots of battles and some teen angst, and I
didn't get enough. There was not enough teen angst for me.
Yeah, I didn't get enough, though. I needed more interactions with the people that we've built up. I think that's why I like the novellas so much, because this is going to those things that I want from a Cytonic book. Not that this wasn't good, like, it was interesting to learn all about the Cytonic world and powers, but when I want to learn a ton about the world and the magic within it, I'm probably going to go towards a Cosmere book and not as likely to go towards the YA genre. One thing that I did really like was the aliens in this world and how life is given to them. So we see the aliens, we interact with them, and then we get these little sketches on the side and descriptions of that their species. And I loved that. I think that was really well done. A good way to introduce us to all of these different characters and get us a little more connected with them, Jack said.
Yeah, and I enjoyed this book. I liked the sort of mid-story jaunt into this new realm. I was a little bit saddened by some of the, I guess, the lived-in feelings that Jack's really happy with. I was happy to get them, but it made the world feel darker than it already did. Like, we had this very sort of Neverland-esque adventure with these undertones that the quote-unquote real world is a darker place than we had even realized, which is all good things. It's just development of a story, kind of like how by the seventh book in Harry Potter, like, kids are dying. So it's not necessarily a bad shift. It's just the shift that I noticed. And the other thing that I didn't particularly love is I didn't get super invested in the character cast this particular go around. A very temporary, knowing that she had to return, and so knowing I didn't have to get particularly invested in this particular crew. But beyond that, very enjoyable read, and I think I'm going to delve now into the novellas a little further.
Thanks so much for joining us. It's just a blast to be back recording, and I'm having a lot of fun. I hope you're having fun listening along to us ramble about these books that we really love. Reach out to us on Twitter as we go along and let us know what you think of our new format. This is going to be a little bit weird to say we're starting a new format as we release this episode first, and it's capstoning a series that we ended last season with, but let us know what you think as we dive through Harry Potter and into Wheel of Time on the new format. As always, I've been your host and judge, Jack.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
And join us next time as we dive into Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
Yay!
Oh, thank you.
Doomslug.
Okay. Doomslug.
Remind me why I leave this door open for my cat to get in.
Because your cat loves to come visit you. Because your cat's happiness matters more than your sanity, clearly.
She is now in the little corner between bookshelves and just happy purring away.